Jeff, what could it possibly take to save me, to save me, to save me, just to save me, save me from sailing over the edge.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Cheryl Schweniger, who directs the New America Foundation's Economic Growth and American Strategy Programs. He was a founding editor of World Policy Journal and more recently served as senior program coordinator for the Project on Development, Trade, and International Finance at the Council on Foreign Relations, and is the author, with Walter Russell Mead, of the Council on Foreign Relations publication, A Financial Architecture for Middle-Class-Oriented Development. He's also a senior fellow at the World Policy Institute. Welcome to Background Briefing, Cheryl Schweniger.
Thank you, Ian.
And the president met today at the White House with European Union leaders. And as the summit ended, the president said the U.S. has a stake in the UE's success. Surely the president himself has a stake, in as much as if the euro crashes, that will bring down the U.S. economy further and probably sink the president's hopes of re-election.
Yeah, I think in any case, the eurozone is going to be a drag on U.S. and world economic growth. Just how serious of a drag will depend on the crisis measures that the European eurozone leaders take in the next few days and weeks. But indeed, you're absolutely correct. The president has a lot at stake with their actions.
So when the president says that the U.S. is ready to do our part to resolve the debt crisis, what what is the Europeans' part in it? I mean, what can the U.S. do?
Well, the U.S. has unfortunately limited influence or limited ability to make a difference in this particular case. The Fed has been and stands ready to provide swap lines with European banks and the European Central Bank. It's also, I think, indulged the European banks in withdrawing equity from their U.S. branches and transferring it to meet capital requirements in Europe. But the fate of the European and the European zone, and to some degree, therefore, the U.S. and world economies, lies with the principal leaders of Germany and France, and in particular whether the German finance and high officials around Angela Merkel will give their blessing to an aggressive actions by the European Central Bank. What is required is the European Central Bank to come in at this time and act as a true lender of last resort, in effect to guarantee to buy European sovereign debts and to cap long-term European government sovereign debt as a way of stopping the run in the European bond markets. Many of the measures they're talking about in terms of long-term reforms may be necessary and may be a step in the direction of making the eurozone work, and that in itself is questionable in the future. But unless they come up with a more reasonable plan that involves either a dramatically enlarged European Financial Stability Fund or by aggressive actions that has the blessing of German, Dutch, and French officials, by the European Central Bank to buy either in the secondary or preferably in the principal markets, although there's constitutional questions about that, European sovereign bonds, then we're going to continue to be in this ongoing, call it light financial contagion.
Well, I think reading between the lines, Cheryl Schweniger, surely what's going on here with the president saying that some tough decisions need to be made, that's as far as he wanted to go, obviously. Geithner, the Secretary of Treasury, saying the Europeans have got to find the political will to create a firewall against this spreading crisis. Arguably, this has been going on for 2 years. I don't know at what point the politics are going to catch up to the markets here. And then you've got the White House Press Secretary, Jay Carney, saying that Europe has the resources and the capability to deal with the crisis, but they need to act decisively and conclusively to resolve the problem. I would interpret all that polite language as the White House is in a bit of a panic, and they're pushing the Europeans as hard as possible. But again, this has been going on for some time. So what is the explanation for why this is so difficult for the Europeans to get their hands around?
One is the structure of the European Union itself, which is where decisions have to be ratified by all 17, I'm talking about the Eurozone members, have to be ratified by all 17 European parliaments. So that has complicated terribly the politics. The second problem is that there is a German philosophy and approach, which is sometimes abetted by a comparable French attitude, that ignores the best of what we've learned in our own crisis about financial crisis management, which is that you have to have strong and decisive and overwhelming action, both in terms of the actions of the European Central Bank, which will have to expand its mandate, and decisive actions of pulling together resources to either recapitalize the banks or to guarantee the solvency of the banks during this crisis. So while Europe has the resources, it may not have the capability because it doesn't have the same institutional framework that the United States benefited from in managing its crisis in 2008 and 2009. It doesn't have that sort of single treasury. It doesn't have a process where the Treasury Secretary can get down on bended knee and beg the House Majority Leader to push her members to vote for a $800 billion TARP, nor does it have the equivalent of a Federal Reserve that is accustomed to intervening into and, in effect, capping interest rates, guaranteeing the banking system, and stopping runs on both sovereign bonds and the private bond markets. So the question of whether it has the capability, it requires actually institutional innovation as the crisis goes on, but that runs smack up against the limits that the economic and political philosophy of the German dominant governing classes impose on economic policy and their thinking about the Eurozone.
Well, again, I'm speaking with Cheryl Swenninger, who directs the New America Foundation's Economic Growth and American Strategy Program. He was the founding editor of the World Policy Journal and served as a senior program coordinator for the Project on Development, Trade, and International Finance at the Council on Foreign Relations. We're talking about the summit today at the White House, where President Obama hosted the European Union leaders trying to get their hands around the ongoing euro crisis. And there is obviously a political component here, in as much as the president's electoral fortunes next year may well be tied to the fate of the euro. What you've just told us, Cheryl Swenninger, really does sort of blow up one of Ron Paul's central theses about getting rid of the Fed. And there are a lot of people on the libertarian right and on the political left who rage against the Fed. But isn't what's happening in Europe an example of why actually you need the Fed?
Oh, well, you're absolutely right, because one of the central lessons, as I wrote recently in The Nation magazine, one of the central lessons of the euro crisis is that you need strong, effective government. And that means a strong, effective central bank. We may want to make the central bank more accountable and the Fed more accountable, but without that institution, we wouldn't have been able to withstand the financial crisis in 2008 and 2009. And it's exactly, if you want to see small government austerity in action, watch the Eurozone. It's interesting that the Eurozone is often accused of being the sort of a victim of European socialism and social welfare states. In fact, the Eurozone is the victim currently of small government, the lack of government, and the lack of an active equivalent of the Federal Reserve. So we've foreseen the future of what of what the Republicans or many of the Republicans would bring to America, a system without sort of fiscal transfers because of states, the emphasis on state rights, the emphasis on a defanged Fed that would not be able to help us manage deflation and manage our own ongoing debt problem, and the impact of austerity, which only brings recession and more debt.
So given the conditions that we have now in Europe, where the cost of borrowing from Italy has gone up to 8% in the last few days, and there was a very disappointing bond sale in Germany on the 23rd of November, and I'm not suggesting that the writing hasn't been on the wall for some time, but what's your sense, Sheryl Swinegar, of whether there's going to be the kind of decisive action that I think the president and the White House are, you know, biting their nails over? I mean, isn't that what we're talking about? Some bold act that stops this drip, drip, drip.
Right, and the bold act has to be taken by the European Central Bank or some combination of the European Central Bank and a highly leveraged up European finance and financial stability fund. I fear that the Germans, which are tiptoeing and moving slowly, are going to be too slow. That the Italy now has moved into what is called bailout zone, meaning it cannot sustain interest rates above 7%. Certainly not 8%, certainly not 10%, where they seem to be headed. Spain is also moving in that direction, but it's also beginning to weaken the center. France and Belgium, now debt are being brought into question. So once it begins to infect the center, driving up their cost, then it also eliminates the ability to use the European Finance and Stability Fund, which, although far too small, had the possibility of being able to be leveraged up. That therefore depends on decisive action by the European Central Bank, but that requires the blessing of Angela Merkel and the German political class. And that is what is not forthcoming. So I fear that we are moving to a European financial and credit event, that we're not sure of the entire implications for the U.S. financial system. To some degree, there is some considerable evidence that American banks and institutions have attempted to limit their exposure over the last 3 to 6 months. Actually, Asia and Latin America could be hit much harder because they're much more dependent on credit from European banks. But this will be a very, very serious event, perhaps comparable, perhaps even greater than the Lehman event. What is needed is actually fairly simple, but it does require a significant political and intellectual break. What is simple is that the European Central Bank, all it has to do is announce that it will buy all European sovereign debt at 5%, and the crisis is essentially over, and it provides opportunities to do the appropriate other reforms and workout. But that's a major, major political move for that to happen.
And you've just suggested, Sheryl Swinegar, that the problem will come with Germany. Now, obviously, the way that this story has been reported from the beginning, or at least understood or misunderstood, I think, is that the impression is that these lazy people in the south, the Italians, the Spaniards and the Greeks who don't pay taxes and borrow in a profligate manner, have been irresponsible and that somehow they're being bailed out. But the reality is it's the irresponsible lenders, largely German and French banks, isn't it? And what I don't understand about the German attitude, which is largely coming down along kind of racist north-south lines at this point, is that Germany has so clearly as being the center of the Eurozone has benefited over since its inception enormously with its advantages in trade, etc., to its Euro partners. So it's a kind of fair weather friend. You know, they've done well while it's going well. But now that it's going poorly, they don't want to step in and stop the bleeding.
Right. And they are still benefiting from the Eurozone because otherwise they're benefiting their industries made more competitive by a lower euro. Their interest rates are lower than what they would be, even in spite of their own problems now with their auctions. Nonetheless, they are benefiting from a safe haven. The problems within the Eurozone are deeply structural and not the result of irresponsible fiscal policies. Yes, one could take issue with a lot of the problems in Greece, but those problems aren't the same as the problems in Italy, Spain, Portugal, Ireland, which were subject to, because of the Eurozone, they had a credit and property bubble. They had interest rates that were too low because interest rates were set for Germany and were just right for Germany, but they were too low during the boom years for Spain, Portugal, Italy, Ireland, etc., and they created credit and property bubbles in many of those economies. And that was the result of, as you said, questionable lending by French and German banks. And so this is a crisis of the Eurozone, which will have to be resolved in several steps. The first is managing the financial contagion and the run on the bonds, but some very serious structural reforms are necessary and not necessarily of a German nature. And it's very questionable whether the Eurozone should continue to exist in its current form.
Well, I thank you for joining us, Cheryl Schweniger. I think you've given us a very clear and albeit somewhat alarming portrait of what's happening, and I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Cheryl Schweniger, who directs the New America Foundation's Economic Growth and American Strategy Programs. He was the founding editor of World Policy Journal, and more recently, he has served as senior program coordinator for the Project on Development, Trade, and International Finance at the Council on Foreign Relations, and is the author, with Walter Russell Mead, of the Council on Foreign Relations publication, A Financial Architecture for Middle-Class-Oriented Development. He's also a senior fellow at the World Policy Institute. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking further about the Eurozone crisis.